We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. Brought to you by AT&T, a proud supporter of Carolina Athletics.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, believe it or not, it's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
You feeling jazzed? Feeling ready?
I feel like it's harder to accept the idea that it's Friday out of season. But I'm working on getting more mentally tough.
Plus, you're only 2 days away from Masters Sunday, where you get to kick back and relax.
Well, to me, as we all know, the whole weekend of the Masters is big.
Locke, I'm surprised I was even able to get Adam to Mobile Pod World headquarters to get this pod done. But he's here.
I've got on my my knickers, because that's when I play golf at the Cradle.
Yeah.
I wear the knickers.
Wearing his green robe. Looking great. And we're glad you're here with us. And we are going to discuss some more Tar Heel football. Earlier this week, we had Dre Bly and Tim Cross with us. And today, Adam, we're going to hit the player-coach dynamic. We've got a Tar Heel senior offensive lineman, Charlie Heck, is going to join us. Charlie slated to be the starting left tackle for the Tar Heels. And then we have
left side, strong side.
And then we have the head coach of the Tar Heels, Mack Brown, joining us as well. Coach Brown continues to just add to his total as the most frequent pod guest in pod history.
He's basically a co-host at this point.
Yeah, this will be Coach Brown's fourth appearance on the pod, which we appreciate every time he's with us. And as always, good stuff in the interview with him coming up.
It really is remarkable that he was the first ever guest on the pod.
We just knew.
I bet if I went back and listened to that, I would probably not be impressed by my performance.
And then, after that, we have the first ever, and we've trademarked this, so don't ever try to use it in any kind of form or fashion, or you will owe us each a dollar.
Don't put it on a t-shirt.
Tar Heel song memory lane list. Just rolls right off the tongue.
THSMLL.
The first ever coming up today, where Adam and I are going to go through and have some fun telling old stories. We're gonna get a couple beverages, get up around the campfire, and spin some yarn, Adam, on some old Tar Heel tales.
I feel like it's one of those like old-time lemonade commercials where I'm sitting up on the porch and I'm wearing my jaunty hat. It doesn't really serve a purpose anymore, but it's part of my thing. And, you know, they've got more thing for my thing.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting on the porch with my glass of lemonade's got a little condensation on the outside.
Sweat, just, it's about a third. You've had about a third of it.
The sun's going down, so it's not too bright anymore. There's a little shade on the porch. Yeah. And just
kind of like your memories, Adam. They're fading just a little bit.
That actually is true, as I was trying to think of it. I was like, what year was that? What game were they playing? Like, what sport? Come sit near my knee, and I'll tell you a story that may or may not be entirely true.
Yeah. It's going to be mostly true.
Based on a true story.
Yeah. So we will do that coming up in just a little bit. But, Adam, what I thought we would do before we got to our interviews is you and I had the opportunity to talk to Coach Brown, not just for the interview that everybody's going to hear coming up here in just a few minutes, but we just kind of chewed the fat with him for a few minutes. And what I think is really interesting is this is now twice, once that I talked about a little bit, I think it was the last pod, where I was there to do something else with Coach Brown, and he just kind of basically asked, hey, you want to talk football for a little bit? And then he did the same thing with us after we interviewed him here for the podcast. And I bring that up because I think it just is a great example of just kind of his approach to promoting his team, in that he is very welcoming with information. I think he understands that you and I are both on the Tar Heel side of things and in what our roles are, and that he is willing to talk and kind of let you know what's going on. And we're not going to repeat word for word what he said, because that's not the point of this. But it's just that he is very open with information. He wants you to understand his team, wants you to understand where they are, so that you can better cover the team. And from a media perspective, that's really beneficial. And while maybe not the exact same way, it seems like that's the way he's handled his program with both kind of the full media that covers Carolina and with the fans that want to know about Carolina. And obviously that level of information will change depending on the situation and who he's talking to. But he is very willing to discuss and wants people to come into his program and know more about it.
Well, and I think it's very obvious that he spent some years in the media.
That's also true,
And I think from everything I've heard, he was very much like this when he was here 1.0. But I think those years in the media are helpful because he's been in these meetings with coaches and then had to talk about what they tell him during a game. So he knows what helps and what does not help.
Mm-hmm.
And he also knows who he thinks has the savvy to repeat verbatim what he says and who might paraphrase it in a more palatable way. And so I think that's very beneficial because he understands. And it's not the fault of any previous coaches that they didn't understand, but they had lived their life in football coach land. And football coach land is not always the same as real world football fan land. And I think it helps that Coach Brown's got some experience on both sides.
So kind of the natural next point, Adam, is what did you take away from – and this, I'm not trying to act like we sat there and talked for 2 hours and broke down the playbook. It was 10 minutes that we talked to him outside of the interview. But did anything stand out to you about what he talked about or any takeaways that you took from that conversation?
I thought when I suggested to him that the Tar Heels should run exclusively the option and he said that was a good idea that he had been thinking about, I thought that was big.
Yeah, he said, well, why do you think Paul Johnson is a special consultant?
Well, you and I had both been around him in kind of backstage areas when he first got the job also. And so I think one of the most striking things was, and this is very common sense, but it was also very different. When he got the job, he didn't know anything about the personnel.
Yeah.
Not in a negative way, but just as you would not if you were not the head coach.
And it happened so quickly, too, going from not the head coach to being the head coach.
And he had kind of a limited idea of, he had watched the Tar Heel games and could remember a couple key players, and he told us, you know, I was hoping this guy and this guy were around, but he wasn't ready to go through the two deep. Well, when we sat there with him this week, he was ready to go through the four deep, including the class of 20, class of 21, class of 22 prospects in the state of North Carolina and beyond. So, and that's a span of, I guess, about 4 months. in which he just immersed himself. As, again, not like I'm giving him a cookie or anything. That's your job.
Right.
But it's just a very different level of understanding and immersement. Is that a word?
Sure.
In Tar Heel football. And I think we most often see him in general in public in kind of that overseer role. And sometimes you don't appreciate the level of football knowledge that's there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's a lot more football knowledge there than you might think if you just see him in the general role all the time.
I think both Mack Brown and Roy Williams don't get enough credit for how much they know their sports.
Right.
It's not – I mean, Roy Williams and Mack Brown can sit there and grease board up with you all day if you want to. And I don't think they get enough credit for that.
Well, I think there's two problems. One is most of us can't do that with them, so they don't feel the need to do it.
Nor do they need to do it. But
right. And two is they're nice, and I think the perception is you can't be nice and some expert tactician. You either have to be one or the other. It's like when you see Chris Beard yelling at his team, you think, well, that guy, he knows how to draw up a play. He's not the friendliest, but whatever. But they're both capable of doing both. That's why they're in the Hall of Fame.
One thing that has piqued my interest here is Mack Brown's relationship with his staff and with the people who work directly with him. Because something that we have heard a lot is also something that we hear a lot about Coach Williams, and we heard a lot about Coach Smith, in that Mack Brown is very demanding of the people who work with him. And he will, and I think Dre Bly mentioned this in our conversation with him earlier in the week, he's going to cut right to it. And whether that's good or that's bad, he's going to cut right to it. But he has the relationship, it appears, with the people who work with and for him, that he may go, Adam, you're not doing that right. But it doesn't automatically make you all, and I'm using you as an example because we know Adam rarely does things right. But you don't then take it personally and get all upset about it. And it's just, it's the professional, because you know that that personal level of care is there. And to me, that when you've reached that level that you can openly criticize somebody in front of their peers and other people, but they don't take it personally because they know that you personally care for their well-being, man, you've hit an incredible balance of your role in that point.
Well, and just talking about that relationship with the staff, but trying not to give away the farm at the same time. While we were in there, we were in the staff room. And so they had a staff meeting scheduled for about 5 minutes after we were supposed to be out of the room.
Yeah.
So I was sitting around doing nothing like usual, and Jones was trying to pack up the world. And as they were preparing for this meeting, there were about four handouts on what they were getting ready to talk about, including schedule for Saturday of the spring game, recruiting stuff, what they were going to talk about at that specific meeting. And everything was put out precisely on the table at everyone's place at exact 90-degree angles. And you don't often think of it that way. And it's not always run that way. But it was insightful, I thought, to see just how much care went into. I mean, these charts were color-coded like a box of Crayola 64. And everyone was expected, and it was clear, they were starting. It was supposed to start at 1. They were going to start at 12:55.
Yeah.
And so just the level of attention to detail that goes into the entire thing is something that I think Carolina football will benefit from.
Finally, I think, and again, you're going to hear from Mack Brown here in just a second, as well as Charlie Heck, and both those guys give some good insight both to the spring. And we talked to Charlie a lot about just him personally too, but you're going to hear about football and how spring's gone and the upcoming months and all that. It seems like there have, as you would expect, there have been some goods and some bads during this spring ball, just in getting the feel from what the coaches have said. You know, they've been kind of feeling things out on where they are personnel-wise, what can best work, how they can best be successful. There have been some positions that have been stronger than other positions, and just all the stuff football-wise that kind of is getting back to normal a little bit, where you've gone through this big upheaval with the coaching change, and now they're a little more familiar with what they have, and you're settling in a little bit more into the pure football side of it.
It feels a little less new and a little more like football. And I think one thing that became obvious when he was talking to us after you turned off the recorder was all the things that Carolina football fans are worried about and say things like, well, don't the coaches see this? Or this is, to me, is one of the biggest problems. I don't know if they see it. He sees it. All the anything you could name that you think of as, oh, boy, this is a big problem the last couple of years, he sees it. And he has tried to identify the source of that problem and come up with two or three possible solutions that may or may not work, but certainly are worth a try. And I thought that was interesting that we sit around and bat around these ideas kind of in general, like, well, I don't know what the problem with this is. Well, it's actually his job to fix it. So when he sees that exact same problem that we do, he then tries to go out and solve it.
So
if there was a problem, yo,
I'll solve it.
He'll solve it.
Let's get to the interviews. So we have Charlie Heck, Tar Heel senior left tackle. Of course, Charlie's brother John was a former player here and now like a super power lifter and works in the weight room with the Tar Heels. Charlie's dad, Andy, is around football and is an assistant coach in the NFL and is a big-time football guy as well, played at Notre Dame. So just a football family. So you'll hear some about that, about what Charlie likes to do off the field, about football itself. You'll hear from him, and then we'll roll right into our discussion with Coach Brown, get a little bit more into kind of the X and O's of what's going on in the spring, how his first 4 months have been, what the next couple months look like, and just all the stuff you would expect. So let's go to Charlie Heck and then Mac Brown. Come back. More to do on the Carolina Insider.
Man, we are excited getting ready for tomorrow's spring game, and now we've brought in an actual expert as opposed to us. This person actually knows what he's talking about, Charlie Heck. As we have said on the podcast before, Jones, if you want to know what's going on with the football team, you ask the offensive linemen because
right.
They always know the most. And they can explain it to you. So, Charlie, just tell us everything that's going on with Tar Heel football and in graphic detail.
Wow, well, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me. We're all really looking forward to the spring game. And, with this whole new coaching staff, it's been really exciting, especially for me being a senior, kind of experiencing this change and seeing kind of the whole culture shift that we've had throughout the spring.
How are things, and I don't ask this question in any way to say something negative about Coach Fedora or the previous staff, but how are things different? How have you felt that change a little bit here over the last few weeks?
I think a big thing that's changed is just kind of excitement throughout the team. Sometimes new is just kind of what the spark that some people need, and I think that people have really been buying in this spring to kind of the new mindset on what we need to accomplish to continue to get better.
Coach Brown told us that one of the first things he felt like he had to do was just build some trust with the players who knew nothing about him, really. How has he gone about and done that, especially with somebody like you who has been in the program for a long time and now is having to do something completely new?
Absolutely, and I mean, that's really important, building trust with new coaches coming in. And I mean, Mac's done an awesome job. I mean, you can just go find him in the lunchroom, sitting with players every single day, getting to know them, hearing about their families, all that. And I think a lot of the coaches have done a good job doing that.
Tell us a little bit about Coach Searles and what he's like to play for him.
Wow, well, Coach Searles is a passionate coach for sure. And I mean, he really gets the O-line excited to go out to practice every day and compete. And, that's something he's really been focused on, creating competition throughout the spring and just kind of creating a tough unit that the O-line needs to be successful.
Are you the one who did you take his shoulder out? Is that why his arm's in a sling now?
No, that's not it. Yeah.
So if you and your brother got in a powerlifting competition, who's going
to
win?
I'm going to have to give that one to John.
When did John become like this mountain of a man? I mean, he's always been a big dude, obviously.
So going into my sophomore year, it was his last year. I thought I was starting to catch him, in the size. I was like, all right, I can finally take him, I think. But, right when he was done playing, he just hit the weight room hard. And, I've got some catching up to do now.
What do you like about this offense? And what are the biggest challenges for you in terms of sort of operating it?
You know, it's a fast-paced offense. Something that's different for the O-line is that we're getting signals from the sideline. Usually we're just used to hearing the play and then rolling, but, you know, we've all got to be on the same page because it's a fast-moving offense. We got to be ready to roll and know your position inside and out.
You come from a football family for sure. Just what, how has that shaped you as a person, being around the game as much as you have been growing up? I know that you originally were a tight end, and but have grown into kind of where you are now. But how has being around the game the way you have shaped you, you think?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, growing up in a football family, since I can remember, my dad was either a player or a coach. And, you know, so football's always been a huge part of this family. And, I mean, growing up, I was always inspired by my brother. I was watching him play. You know, I was like, I want to be like that. He goes to North Carolina. I was like, I want to go to North Carolina now. But, you know, with our dad, you know, it was always available for us to have kind of just that influence of a father and a coach. So that was really cool growing up. But, you know, my dad always did a good job kind of putting family first throughout that. And
How did he separate the two? You know what I mean? So how did he was your dad, but also maybe was your coach, or how did he wear those two different hats?
So he was 100% always the dad first, and he was never imposing, you know, putting his coaching out on us. You know, he attended every single game that he could try to, and he was always there to offer advice if we needed it or asked for it.
How did he manage it when he thought, or did he even talk about things like X's and O's things, or things he thought you might have done wrong, but maybe you had been coached that way, and if so, that's probably terrible coaching, but he didn't want to say that. How did he manage all that?
You know, he's also done a good job just letting the coaches coach. I mean, he's not my coach right now. He's my dad, and so he's just let the coaches do their job, and I have trust in that.
What do you think you know about football and being part of a team, having lived football, that maybe people who just kind of watch it on a Saturday don't fully appreciate?
I mean, what people might not appreciate is that it's really affecting people's lives and families all around them. Mm-hmm. I mean, wins or losses can really change the whole family's dynamic. I mean, I remember thinking, oh, I might move this year, I might move that year. I was lucky to stay around the same place for most of my childhood, but, you know, I think people watching from the outside don't really have the perspective of that.
As a kid, are you conscious of that? Like, do you know, I mean, we might have to go somewhere else if daddy doesn't win.
Exactly. No. So that was a big part growing up, just kind of having that, just that worrying about that kind of, and just having faith that we're just enjoy where you are at the moment.
Charlie, when did you realize that maybe, because you were tight end, right? I'm not wrong about that. When
yes.
did you realize that you were maybe growing out of that and into something else?
You know, that's a funny story. I always had in the back of my mind the thought that I might end up being an offensive lineman. You know, I was playing kind of the DN tight end in high school. And when I first got here, I checked the roster online, and I was number 83, and I was like, all right, nice.
Sounds like a slot receiver to me. Let's go.
But day I showed up here, my locker said number 67. And going to the O-line meetings just a few minutes later. So
it was more suggested to you that you were making this change.
No, but it was great.
Do you secretly know that if they ever put in the tackle-eligible play, that's all you? Like,
exactly.
you're made for that?
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, you're a senior now. You can start just sliding in those suggestions. Yep. That'd be easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like to do away from football?
You know, hanging out with my friends. I got a great group of guys living in my house. You know, some former players. I got Jake Bargis, Tommy Hatton, Nick Polino, and Nathan Elliott was one of our roommates. Just hanging out with them, relaxing, you know. Big movie buff, so I like to go see some movies with some of my friends. Just hanging out.
What are some of your favorite movies?
One of my favorite movies of all time, Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not a movie, but what I will say is I'm a massive Game of Thrones fan. So
Hey, new season, are you ready?
I'm very ready.
New season this Sunday, Adam.
Yep.
2 days from now. Adam knows nothing about Game of Thrones.
I know nothing about Game of Thrones.
Yep.
I also know nothing about the Marvel movies. Are you a Marvel movies fan?
I am a Marvel movies
fan. There you go.
Yep.
How do you feel about Top Gun?
Top Gun fan also.
Okay, good. That's we just did a thing where we watched Top Gun and then sort of assessed it in 2019 mode. It holds up just fine.
Yes.
I mean, it's an all-time classic.
What is – okay, so Adam and I do every now and then we review older movies. Give us an older movie that's a Charlie Heck favorite that we should review.
Mm.
I know that's tough.
That is tough.
Although Shawshank Redemption,
that's what I was yesterday. That's what I was leaning towards. That's what I would have originally said.
You ever seen Roadhouse?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That would be, you know, Nick Polino's. He got me into that one.
Really?
So, really?
Yep, he is the real movie buff, if you want to ask him.
You ever seen Footloose?
Yes.
Wow. Charlie's got a deep well of knowledge right here.
Charlie could just come on with us.
I didn't feel like he was as big a Footloose fan as Top Gun or Game of Thrones.
I've seen it.
I'm not going to say I go anger dance in the parking lot every now and then. But all right, Charlie, what after spring game's over, what is the next couple of weeks, couple of months like for you? What do you hope to accomplish before you guys all get back together and get ready for fall practice?
Yeah, so just continuing to get better in the weight room. We're going to have a lot of time with Coach Hess during this time. And, I mean, it's just continuing to work on mobility, flexibility, and strength. And that's something I'm really going to try to improve on, is just continuing to get stronger going into the season.
A lot of players have said positive things about Coach Hess. What has, in your opinion, made that such a positive start for the players and the strength coach?
It's huge. I mean, he really got the players to buy into what he was programming in. And something that was really cool is kind of the football position-specific lifts that we've been doing. So it's not like we're not basically training for the cross-country team. The O-line's actually doing stuff that will kind of represent what we'll be doing during games. So that's been really nice.
Last thing. What when all is said and done next year, and I know we're a long way away from that, but what will constitute a successful senior campaign for you next season?
Right now, I've got a few goals. It's winning the Coastal, going to the ACC Championship, and winning our last game. And, you know, I think as a senior, you know, coming in as a freshman, I went to the ACC Championship game with that team, got to experience that, and then started to kind of decline since then. And so I want to start building back up to the top where I think we can be.
It is mid-April, and that is football time in Chapel Hill.
That's right.
And we have gone straight to the source of all the excitement with Mac Brown here in the Keenan Football Center. He was watching film when we came in. He's doing a staff meeting when we go out. And in between, he's going to give us a few minutes here on the Carolina Insider. So, Coach, we really appreciate it. How has spring practice gone so far?
Adam, it's really been good. The number one, I talked to Coach Fedora and told him that these are great young people. They've done everything we've asked them to do, and there's no better compliment to a coach than the character of the guys that he brought in. And even with a tough season last year, they're doing well in school. Brian Hess told me they're competing like the Army guys did, which is as good a compliment as you can give young people in our country with that leadership that they've got. We are trying to develop leadership. We're still very thin at some positions, especially up front on defense. So we've got some work to do. But right now, they're giving us everything they've got. The other thing I've told them is we need them to give us what we're trying to give them, and that's the gift of consistency, because we'll have a good scrimmage, and then we'll have an average practice. We've got to get so we have effort on every play every day, and we're not there yet, but we had our best scrimmage last Saturday.
Coach, I'm sure you had some kind of thought in your mind on what the situation was like here, maybe how your roster was set up here when you arrived. How has that been different, or has it been about what you thought it would be when you came back?
I think it's better than I felt coming in. You know, I sat there last year like you guys, and I watched, but you knew everything that was going on. I didn't. So from afar, being a fan of Carolina and a fan of Coach Fedora, I was hoping. I was a fan more than anything else, but I was watching 24 games at one time, so I really didn't pay attention. I remember saying, I hope that big defensive end's back that made so many plays, and I hope number 8's back. I didn't know about the rest of them. I knew the quarterbacks were young, and no was the first answer, and Michael Carter's been as good as I thought he was. So we're thinner on defense than I thought, but we've also got 5 guys that are out that'll be back and should play next fall. We've got to figure out why we've had so many injuries over the last couple of years and get that fixed. And if we do have somebody hurt because it's a tough sport, how do we get them back quicker but make sure that they're healthy? So we've got some things there we've got to figure out. But I've told our coaches we got enough players. We got to coach them. And Coach Urban Meyer was in here for our high school clinic. One thing he said is, "You are you a three as a coach or a five? Because coaching does matter." And that's the challenge for us. It's on us. The players need to give us everything they've got, and we need to coach them up.
You mentioned the high school clinic this past weekend, and Jones and I talked about this a little earlier this week. There seems to be such a positive feeling around Carolina football right now. People want to be around. Jones keeps saying it feels like an event. Why do you think that is?
Everybody wants us to be good. Obviously, our competitors don't, but even they've got a little chatter about us, which is always good when other people are concerned about when you're hanging around. We have a track record that we're going to win. We're going to win within the rules, and we're going to win with class. The staff did an amazing job of turning around what could have been a very difficult recruiting class in a very short period of time, and got some really good players in there that are going to help us moving forward. And at the same time, the people in the state of North Carolina want the University of North Carolina to be good. It helps our state. It helps high school football in our state. And so many of the high school coaches now were students when I was here before. They were young assistants. Their dads were the coach. And so there's so many ties that have been renewed that I've been a little overwhelmed with the hospitality that we've gotten from not only the state of North Carolina, but the high school coaches as well.
You mentioned your young quarterbacks a little bit earlier. You have three guys who seem to be pretty talented but are still very early in their maturation as players. What have you seen from those three guys? As I know you hadn't necessarily been setting the depth chart, but more just allowing them to learn and grow some.
Right. I told them the other day that they're all three good enough. They're three guys I would have recruited at Texas. They're talented. They're smart. They're competitive. They've all gotten along. It's been a good room, and that's a very difficult situation. It's a good one,
yeah,
but a difficult one because they're all the same age. You got one true freshman and two redshirt freshmen, and normally they don't stay. So our goal is to figure out the one that's going to start's the one that moves the team in the fall and puts the ball in the end zone. That's on them because they're all three good enough. But we made a conscious decision not to try to separate them this spring because the offense is unique for a quarterback. But he has a lot to do. He has a lot on his mind. And we thought until they learned the unique things about this offense, it was unfair to them to say, okay, first week, here's a starter, and here's not. Let's let them learn. And then in the fall, we'll see who steps up. And a lot of times you'll see the difference in who steps up over the summer with the leadership for the team. I remember with Colt McCoy, Jevin Snead was the starting quarterback in my mind coming out of spring. And when I talked to some seniors that I trusted starting the fall, they said, "Oh, Coach, you're going to be surprised. Colt McCoy has stepped up. He's stronger. He's throwing the balls to the right guys. And we think he'll end up being the starter." And, of course, he ended up being a contender for the Heisman.
You mentioned the offense. What are some unique things in your mind about this offense, or what you hope that it becomes here in Chapel Hill?
So far, what I'm seeing is exactly what I wanted. It's the Oklahoma model of the air raid offensive passing game with the power running game. And it's a lot of downhill power. It's a lot of pulling counter sweeps. It's got a lot of different things to it. But it's simplistic for the players. The quarterback has to make all the decisions. And that's what we wanted. I wanted something that looked very complicated and was simple, like we will be on defense, very right. Similar. So far I'm very, very pleased. It's exactly to this point what I wanted it to be.
After the spring game, you may not see these players as regularly as you have here over the last month or so. Who stands out to you as somebody, a player or two, who you've become comfortable? They understand the message you're trying to get across, and you feel like you can rely on them to relay that to their teammates.
It's usually the older players. Because they're the ones that get it. The juniors and seniors, they don't have much time left. But if you and I'm always hesitant to throw names out because you'll miss somebody, but the running back room has been our best room. Those players are really good. You've got Antonio Williams has hustled on every snap of anything we've done all spring. He has been a tremendous leader. And at the same time, then Michael Carter and Javonte Williams are guys that are really good. They're talented. Coach Meyer was talking about them this weekend. Who's that guy? where'd he come from? And then you've got British Brooks as a young guy that walked on, and he's a talented young back. So, but we're losing. We've already had the Jordan Brown transfer. We're losing Antonio Williams. So, and you never know with Michael Carter. He'll be a guy that will look at the NFL and they'll look at him. So, we've got to get some young backs, and we've got to do that. But they've been very impressive. I think that's our number one unit right now on this football team. Then you go to Charlie Heck. He's been really good. He's a leader. He's smart. He's talented. He's a guy that can do a lot of things for us and do it well. You look at Tamon Fox and Aaron Crawford up front. They've been the two guys that have been standouts this spring every practice. They haven't let up a play. They've been all over the place. Dominic Ross at linebacker is really the only older guy there, so he's having to step up, and we've got to help some of those other guys. And then when you look at the secondary, you're still trying to find guys and work it out because you've got a lot of guys out at outside linebacker. You got guys out in the front. You've got guys out in the secondary. But DJ stepped up. He's done a really good job for us at free safety. Trey Morrison still playing well at nickel. Patrice Renee has done a good job at corner. And we got a lot of other guys competing at those positions. So I think there are a lot of guys that are starting to get it. It's very, very difficult with change when you first come in. The coach usually isn't the guy that recruited you. The system isn't the one you came in to play for. So building trust, learning to communicate with young guys when they don't trust you at first, and all of those things are difficult. But we think, even Coach Meyer mentioned it, the circle of trust, without trust you got nothing. And we think that that's really coming together. We like the team. They're starting to listen to us, and they're starting to respond. And that message will have to be carried by them throughout the summer.
Coach, most of your staff has worked with you or played for you or had some tie to you in the past. Not everyone, but most of them did. That doesn't guarantee that they will then automatically work well together. How has that kind of meshing of your assistants gone as you guys have really gotten to it here?
It's funny. When Urban and I were talking about this weekend, we said the hardest part is to get everybody on the same page, get everybody to understand the expectations you have, and get them to do their job. Why should it be that hard that you just don't do your job? So we've had some hard days with everybody coming together, even with the guys that played for me. They'd never worked with me. So I've yelled at them a few times, and I'll say to Corey Holiday, sorry, bud, we got to get this fixed. And he said, oh, Coach, you've yelled at me before. So that's nothing new. And, of course, it's all new for Dre Bly. I told him yesterday he's definitely the most improved from where we started to where we are. And I said, that doesn't mean you're where you need to be. That means you were way down here low because you'd never coached college football before. The hard thing about it, the two hardest things about, to me, the college football coaching in general right now is, number one, you got to evaluate the talent that you bring in that can mesh together as a staff and players. Who fits here? Who fits our system? Who's going to play hard every day? Who's going to listen to us? And even more importantly now with the transfer portal, if you're going to yell at a guy and he's going to quit, then we brought in the wrong guy. I mean, he needs to love this place. He needs to care about us. And we've got to care about him. And that's it. And the second thing is our staff meshing together and making those guys do what they're supposed to do, but play with energy every day. And my 5 years off, I saw so many teams that didn't play hard. And I'm sitting there thinking, this makes no sense. These are kids that try so hard. They work year-round. How can they come out here on a Saturday and be flat and not have energy? You can't do that. So our goal is to get our staff and our team to have energy every day in practice, and that's just who you are. You can't play up to somebody and down to somebody. Our guys will be excited about playing Clemson. That's easy. That's the best team in the country. But are we going to do that every week? And that's we got to have that attitude. And that's what's meshing together right now. But it takes a while. And I learned a lot of things in my 5 years off. And that's one of them. We're not going to have a team that doesn't play hard. And if they do, it's because the coaches didn't prepare them.
Have there been any challenges you did not anticipate or that you didn't know were going to be as challenging as they've turned out to be?
You know, most of the facilities are good. The new indoor area is as good as there is in the country. Our field has been really problematic the last few years, and that's why we're, so many people use it, and it's we get a lot of rain. So that's why we put turf in. We want to have a fast team. The turf and grass is there's really no difference now with injuries. Right. It's so similar. And just like we couldn't practice on the game field this Saturday because of rain, and it was soft. And if we'd had turf, it cleared up. We could have gone out there and practiced without question. So that's going to be a big help for us. We have to show improvements in some areas. So I'm loving the fact that we'll be able to redo our locker room with new lockers, and the players chose those. They'll be the best in the country. Coach Hess is going to be able to clean up some things in the weight room that'll help us there. So really and truly, I think the biggest thing is just getting the guys to believe in themselves and have hope, getting the staff all on the same page, and making sure that we're moving forward to give us the best chance to win next fall.
Coach, last thing, because I know we got a lot going on, and you're very busy. Spring game coming up, 5 o'clock on Saturday. What, in your mind, is the goal of that event, and what do you hope Carolina fans can help you do on that particular afternoon?
The first thing is to challenge the fans. Only thing I want is you to show the players that you care, that it's important. So show up. It'll be an hour. Give me an hour. Give me an hour and a half, and 2.5, 3 hours if you want your kids to have fun. But why not come out on a pretty day and just sit and have fun and say thank you to these kids for working so hard and show our assistant coaches, I know how special this place is. And whether anybody shows up or not Saturday, I know they're going to show up in the fall, but I want them here Saturday. And that's really important. We're thin. We'll probably scrimmage for an hour. We got to all keep our fingers crossed and hope we get nobody hurt, because we don't have enough of them right now, and we'll be a better team this summer when all the young ones get here and all the hurt ones get back. So probably what the fans see on Saturday is not what they'll see in the fall, but these guys are excited about it, and they're going to play hard, and I want to have a little buzz around the stadium on Saturday afternoon, because this is a new era. It's going to be good. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. And that really starts on Saturday. I told the players, this is the first time that people will get to see the new you. And we can't talk about the 11 wins. We can't talk about the 8 wins, so we're sure not going to talk about the last 2 years. Let's talk about moving forward. You don't forget what happened in the past, but you look forward, you don't look back.
Our interviews with Charlie Heck and Mac Brown, brought to you by the Carolina Insiders, presenting sponsor, AT&T. AT&T, proud supporter of Carolina Athletics. More for your thing, that's our thing, at AT&T. For more than 225 years now, the University of North Carolina has worked to improve the lives of the people of the Tar Heel State. As the nation's first public university, Carolina educates and trains doctors, healthcare workers, teachers, entrepreneurs, inventors, scientists, and so much more who are practicing and working all across this state. To see what's happening and to see the impact Tar Heels make, go to unc.edu. When all those fine people need a little time off, where do they go? They pull up the summer tea package at Pinehurst. For just $1,704, 3 nights accommodations at the Carolina Hotel, 4 rounds of golf, breakfast and dinner daily. It's all waiting for you at Pinehurst. I bet Pinehurst and all golf courses, Adam, the week after a Masters weekend or a major like a U.S. Open, I bet the Monday after that, the driving range is full and you better keep your head on a swivel.
I don't, as we know, I'm not in the golf world. So do people go play golf on Masters weekend, or is everybody at home shuttered in their house?
Well, the thing about the Masters is, and really all of them, the British Open's, well, I guess that we just call it the Open Championship now, is a little different because of the time change. So that's playing early in the morning. So I think a lot of people try to go out and play early in the day. Mm. And then you can get done, and then you've got the afternoon. So it's like it's wall-to-wall golf, your dream. just right. from morning till night.
It's like when you hit the hole-in-one on the 18th hole of the putt-putt course, and they give you the free game, yeah. and yeah. then you just go right yeah. back around and do it all again.
I remember a couple years ago, the U.S. Open, which, you know, U.S. Open's in June, so already the tee times are a little later because you got much more light, and so the event just goes longer or deeper into the day. And they were playing, I think, in Washington State or something. It was on the West Coast, and so it didn't get over till like midnight. It was glorious. It was awesome.
Well, it sounds like the Masters schedule will be conducive to this weekend because you can get your tee time in the morning.
Yep.
And then maybe watch a little bit after lunchtime and then head to Keenan Stadium for the spring.
And that's the Saturday. Look, Sunday's the day, obviously.
What day is moving day?
That's Saturday.
Okay.
Saturday is moving day.
All right.
Because that's your time where, look, you've made the cut. Mm-hmm. But it's time to make a move. If you're serious about making this happen by the end of the day.
I am.
Right. By the end of the day on Saturday, you have to have made a move.
Okay.
You don't have to, but I mean, in theory, you need to have made a move to put yourself in position to win.
Right.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay, Adam, we've never done this before. The first ever Tar Heel song memory lane list. Trademark. So what we were going to do, or what we are going to do, is go back in time, and we thought we'd pick a couple songs that spark specific memories for Adam and me. And so the goal of this is not only to hear some jamming tunes, but to tell some fun old stories and kind of how these songs relate to them and all those things. And we're not talking about the fight song or Rah Rah Carolina or whatever. We're talking about kind of just, you know how songs bring up certain memories about certain times in your life, Adam? Summer of 69. I bought my first real six string. Sorry. Adam, I thought since this was my idea,
right,
I would let you go first.
Oh, that makes sense.
Well, it's like you're the guest.
Oh, I understand.
So you get to go first.
I'm the away team.
Yeah.
Okay, my first one's going to be one that I don't think you'll have because I don't want to steal your thunder.
Well, you don't have to. There's no thunder being stolen.
I don't want to steal your thunder. Okay, so my first one is Proud Mary by Tina Turner, not the Creedence Clearwater Revival version.
Wow. Now and
then, Tina Turner. Because in 1993, we joined CBS Live in New Orleans for Final Four. The broadcast shows the overhead shot of the Superdome. Next, cut to the mighty Mississippi River, on which a steamboat is churning its way across the water. And then we start to hear the slow part of Proud Mary, the part of the beginning where Tina Turner's like, "We're about to do this, y'all."
I like... For your Tina Turner impression, you had to drop the level of your voice.
Yeah, well, it's Tina Turner. And so we get a little bit of the slow part as we're kind of easing into this idea that we're in New Orleans. But then we're about to kick it, and we're about to up the tempo a little bit, and we're going to the hot part of Proud Mary.
Yeah.
Proud Mary, keep on rolling. And that's when we go to the action shots from the Final Four, and I think the whole tournament up to that point.
It was like a pre-One Shining moment.
Yeah, it was like a pre-montage, a pre-modj.
So this is before the game.
Before the game.
Yeah.
And I think, remember how they used to do Prelude to a Championship at 8:30, game at 9? I think this was the game part. So I think, like, CBS comes on at 9.
We had already seen the Gumbel Brothers.
Yeah, that's right. We see the Superdome cut to Steamboat. And now, I was at that game.
Yeah.
I was at that game. And
Chris Webber told me that he was going to text me back.
But he wasn't there, Jones. We're out of town. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So I was there at the 93 Final Four, at which time one cool thing that happened was my dad and my uncle were there, and my uncle was in line for concessions with Michael Jordan's dad and bought Michael Jordan's dad a Coca-Cola.
Wow. That is actually pretty cool.
Hopefully that is not a violation. If so, I feel like it's expired.
So see you later, 93 banner.
Well, really, it's the 82 one that's in jeopardy. So that was cool. But then I then went home and probably watched that game on my VCR video cassette probably 100 times. And I would watch that beginning part every time. And to be honest with you, I had never heard that song prior to that day.
Wow.
And so I really at first thought maybe CBS had commissioned this song to, because it fits so perfectly. Because they were like, rolling on the river.
Rolling on the river.
Rolling on
the river.
And then you get a little bit of quiet, and then boom, here we go.
This is like the Blues Brothers are here.
Yeah, very similar. So that song to me was so perfect about New Orleans and the 93 team, which we both love so much.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I hear that song, it doesn't matter when or where, I immediately think about the 1993 championship.
My first choice is going to be a song that everybody is going to immediately know when they hear this opening portion of the song.
And that's Jump Around, Adam.
Yeah.
Now, this, again, our story's based on a true story. This is how I think it went down. Now, keep in mind, we're talking, this was more than 10 years ago now at this point. So, when I was in college, we would play, like, we had, like, a rec team, right? And so you'd play all the different rec stuff. We won the softball championship, campus-wide softball champs. 1998.
Slow pitch.
Take that, fraternity champ.
You went down, E-House.
And so before games, basketball and softball were the only two that I really wanted to play.
You were out there when they were doing the cricket.
No, the bowling and all that stuff. Because we won the campus-wide championship one time, too, where you got enough points if you participated.
Like the Olympics?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. You're a juggernaut.
Neither here nor there, Adam.
It's not important, but we won.
No big deal. We're the champs. So to get myself psyched up, I would play Jump Around. And so, like, all the dudes in my hall, we were all on the team. And so I'd open the door to my room and crank up Jump Around. I'm here, burr, 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 burr. Then we'd all go out on dates with our super hot girlfriends. So, fast forward a couple of years. Future pod guest Ken Cleary and I are in the beginnings of trying to manage what eventually is now a much bigger deal and that thankfully they have removed me from any decision making.
At that point, for real, it was like y'all too.
Yeah. What has become Go Heels Productions.
Right.
But at that point, it was just, I mean, and there were some other people involved, but mostly Ken and I were trying to figure out what in the world we were doing. And so there became the thought of having a song before tip-off. And I think these details are a little fuzzy. I know they're all connected, but I'm not quite sure how. Remember there was the year in football where they played the Let's Get It Started?
Let's get it started. Ha. Let's get it started in here.
Get it started. Ha. before the kickoff.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was about this same time that we were doing this for basketball. And so I knew in my mind that it got me hype, Adam, to get Jump Around going. And I think, again, I'm about 99% sure that that's how it went down and how we decided to play Jump Around before the tip. Now, side note to this story, 2007, Jump Around is decently ingrained into the pregame festivities now. Tar Heels hosting Virginia Tech. Remember when they had Xavier Dowdell and another guard who was really good, whose name I can't remember? And what was it? Now it's going to bug me. He was a little short, squatty guy, good player.
Adam?
And so something happened, and the song didn't play.
That's right.
I've told this story before, I think. And so something went wrong, and the song didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the post game, I don't think it was the post game like press conference right after the game. I think it was Coach Williams' next like midweek press conference. Mm-hmm. I don't know if somebody asked him about Jump Around or asked him about something. And he said, "Well, all I know is that the one time that daggum song didn't play, we lose. So whoever's responsible for that better make sure that happens again, or they're not going to be working here anymore," or something along those lines. And I'm sitting there in the crowd like, oh, no. Even though I was doing pregame, halftime, postgame at that point, and Ken was actually the one who was, I'm guessing, hitting the button, probably on like a tape player to make it play. And I remember thinking, Jump Around will forever play as long as Roy Williams wants it from this point forward.
Well, and I'll only add two bits of color to that. One was, remember, Carolina played at Wisconsin in football in 2003, September 20th, to be exact.
Yep.
And Wisconsin used Jump Around
and has for a while.
I think before the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And if I remember right, I believe Norwood Teague was on that trip, and that was kind of the introduction to the idea that this might work.
Yep.
And so when y'all suggested Jump Around, everybody immediately had a frame of reference that it might work. And the only other thing I would say is, if you are a fairly recent vintage Tar Heel fan, you may not appreciate how revolutionary it was to have music and dancing before tip-off of a Carolina basketball game at the Smith Center.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Now we all think, oh, yeah, you're going to play Jump Around. Of course, yeah, that's what you do before tip-off. But let's say it's 2006, and all of a sudden that song's coming out of the Smith Center loudspeakers, there were some traumatized people in the building.
What's happening? Is this a tornado drill?
Something's hitting my ears.
Something's hitting my ears.
Well, and then you look over at the bench, and there's Danny Green.
He's
not locked in, mentally focused, going through his game plan. He's doing a dance with his body.
What is happening?
This has never been seen.
Something's hitting my eyes.
It's my eyes and my ears. All I want to do is see basketball, the big flag, the Blues Brothers.
And my heart, Adam.
But that was very different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. That was a good one.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I got to go back to my notes. Okay. Which one do I want to do next? I'm going to do, okay, this is a medley.
Oh, wow.
Because I think of both these songs the exact same way.
Mm. So basically you're cheating is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Baby Girl by Sugarland.
Oh, okay.
And Springsteen by Eric Church. Do you know the relevance of these songs?
No.
Well, that
I mean, I know. I don't even know Baby Girl, at least off
top. Yes, you do. You will know it when you hear it.
Unless the only thing I can think of is this is some kind of – were they pregame baseball songs? Okay.
Yes. That was going to break my heart a little bit if you didn't know it.
Because, well, can I add Chicken Fried?
Oh, yeah, that's right, by Zach Brown Band.
Yeah, by the Zach Brown Band.
Yep.
Okay, you go ahead, but I will add Chicken Fried to the story.
You know, well, I'm a chicken fried. Cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and a radio. Oh, oh, oh.
Okay, so as you may or may not know, Jones and I did a few baseball games on the radio back in a previous life. And that was a lot of fun, but one element of that job was you got to the park very early.
Yeah.
Let's say the game started at 2. You got there between 11 and 12, depending on how committed you were and whether you thought they might run out of food in the press box. When you got there early, you got to hear the either Carolina's BP playlist, which usually was on Scott Forbes' iPod and would sometimes ring.
Yeah, he'd get a call sometimes.
Or, on the road, you would hear the other team's BP playlist. 101% of the time on that playlist would be Baby Girl by Sugarland, which, as I remember, really started to infuriate you.
Yeah, I got it. I don't, that one doesn't, like, I can't, I know Springsteen and I know Chicken Fried. I'm not sure I can remember Baby
Love
Girl.
Love your baby girl.
I can tell I like it already. But only when you sing it.
Springsteen by Eric Church would be on there, and you're right, Chicken Fried would be on there too. In some order, it didn't matter what park you were in, whether you were in Coral Gables, Florida, or Charlottesville, Virginia on Mother's Day weekend, as we were every single weekend for 25 years, possibly an exaggeration. Those three songs would be on there, and you'd be sitting there filling out your scorebook, and you'd find yourself... Chicken Fried. Only on a Friday night. I mean,
to me, Chicken Fried's number one in the AP rankings for this purpose.
Right. Well, and yes. But I think the funny thing is I've since been fortunate to see Springsteen in many other circumstances. And one thing Eric Church always talks about with that song is, like, this song is about connecting a song with a memory. And that's exactly what I do with that song. It's just that the memory is so weird. It's of, like, BP at Doak Field, which is not necessarily what I want to remember. But anytime I hear that song, I think, oh, I better fill in the leadoff hitter. Let's write in the bullpen pitchers and their ERAs.
Isn't it funny to think about, you were talking about the press box, how much better Boschimer's, I mean, I don't think people appreciate how much better Boschimer Stadium is now than it was before the renovation.
There's no way they can appreciate that.
I mean, so the last full year played in the old Bosch was 07, 08 was the year that Carolina baseball played in Cary while the stadium was being renovated. They played for the first time in what I'll call the new Bosch in 09. So it's been 10 years, and they've continued to kind of tinker and make some upgrades and continue to keep things modern. It is night and day. There was one bathroom for each gender. There was one male and one female bathroom for the entire stadium, and that was it. That was it.
And you had to, like, slide by people on the concourse.
Ugh.
If more than two people wanted to get a hot dog, there was some major congestion.
Okay, well, since we're going baseball, Adam,
bring it home.
Fire up Pat Green.
I've got this on my list.
So, Wave on Wave, Pat Green, 2006, Carolina Baseball.
Yep.
I don't know how this song... So, okay. So, here's a little-known fact about the baseball broadcast, Adam. Really, not only were we doing the on-air part, but it's... We did everything for the broadcast.
You're using we very loosely.
So, I mean, I built the commercial breaks. I ran the commercial breaks. I ran all the music.
the open, like all of it. So all the production, and I'm not saying Cry Me a River. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there in the broadcast world who do that. And although building the commercial breaks themselves was pretty impressive. but so.
And I did it while I was working out.
Yeah, no big deal. While, yeah, I was curling on the side. But so it wasn't just calling the game. You know, we had our fingertips were on all of it. And so part of the – because here's the thing about baseball. Baseball can be a grind. There's a lot of games, and I enjoy baseball, as do you, and I love doing baseball. But it's a lot of games. And so – and we always – this could be a whole other discussion. But so people would be like, oh, you guys are always so crazy up there in the booth. Well, yeah, because if you're super serious for every moment, for every single game, you're going to not enjoy it because it just would wear you out. And so part of the thing that we tried to make fun with it was have, like, fun songs coming back from commercial break. And we'd change it a couple times a year and keep some, put some new ones in there, whatever. And so somehow Wave On – which, by the way, Wave On Wave is just a great song, number one.
Yeah.
But it's a great – it just makes – like these one, like the ones you were – it just makes me feel like it's baseball for whatever reason. Just the feel of the song feels like baseball to me. And so it was on the playlist for 2006, which was not the first year that we did the games, but the first year that Carolina had busted through and Chad Flack hit the home run in Alabama, and they went to the College World Series for what was the first of four consecutive trips, 5 and 6 years. And so – it was just a very – it was a memorable season and a fun time. And Wave On Wave, somehow, Adam, became like the song that I associate most with 2006. And I know for a fact that the highlight video from that year – and it wasn't long. It was 2 minutes or something – was put to Wave On Wave. And I think in the championship game, it got to the point that our superstition was so bad that we played it coming back from every single commercial break because there was no need to mess around with anything else. And, Adam, I still contend until 2016 in basketball, and we talked about this, I think, we have talked about this before, I still – and I get that the interest in the two sports aren't the same, and I get that the Final Four is a bigger entity and all those things. To me, those two losses, the 06 baseball loss and the 16 basketball championship loss, are the two hardest losses, and I hold them equal to each other, are the two hardest losses that I have ever seen a Tar Heel team take. Fortunately for basketball, we know that it helped tell the story of the next year, whereas unfortunately for baseball, while they did go to the World Series multiple years in a row, they were unable to win the championship to this point. They have a team that can contend again this year. But those two seasons, to me, are very similar, but fun times, just a good time, you know, great time for that team, and that song really makes me think of that season.
I looked a long time this morning for that video. It's not on YouTube, the 06 highlight video to Wave On Wave.
Yeah, I have – it does exist because I think at the first pitch dinner 3 years ago when that 06 team was back, I think they played it when those guys were back. And so – but it's not – it is not out there in internet land because Carolina was still – as an athletic department, still trying to figure out how to best handle all video. And so the archiving system wasn't as good and technology wasn't as good as it is now. But it does exist somewhere because I've seen it.
When I think about Carolina baseball, I think of one of two things, either Chad Flack's home run or like a montage of 06 plays with that song in the background.
Yep.
And the lighting is perfect. Like it's just before sundown.
Oh, yeah.
And old Mike Cavicini's out there hustling. And Dustin Ackley is getting base knocks. Well, not really.
Well, he was the next year, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Josh Horton's what
it's in my
sure.
mind.
Yeah.
But not everything is correct in my mind. but that song, and it actually, the song came out in 03, which surprised
really?
Me.
Really? I thought it was much older than that.
No, because I looked it up.
Adam.
And it came out in 03, so it's not like it was fresh off the top 40 list, but in my mind it was.
Yeah. Done it, Pat Green.
I had that on my list too. Okay. Another one on my list that I'm guessing you may have, One Shining Moment.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
oh, yeah.
Now, this could really be any time, but the one it brings specifically to mind is 2009. Hmm. And that was in Detroit,
yes,
one of the most scenic parts of America. And what I had noticed...
Don't you ever talk bad about Detroit, Adam. The Tar Heels won a championship yeah, there.
It's fine with me. Detroit and St. Louis are great places that I'd like to
Glendale
vacation.
Slash Phoenix,
yeah, it's fine.
Spread out beauty.
May or may not be a city. It's fine. I'm in favor. So in 05, I was still kind of new and didn't really know what I was doing. And I didn't fully appreciate the fact that my media credential would grant me access to the court. But I kind of knew it, but I didn't want to push it because I didn't want to get thrown out because the Tar Heels had just won the national title. Yeah. And so I was trying to play it cool. By 09, I was a jaded old bat. Now, let me rephrase that.
That was one of the most shocking moments in pod history.
By 09, I was a jaded old cynic. And I knew...
Oh, don't you worry, Adam. They will both stay in. One shining moment, you reached deep inside. One shining
moment, you knew you were alive. And I knew that my credential would possibly get me on the floor. So I gave it a shot. And what do you know? It did. After the game, I'm talking about. Carolina had won. They had dominated Michigan State. So I climb up on the court, which I basically needed a Werner ladder to get there.
Keep in mind, this was before the seats were below the court. It's just because Adam's so small.
Well, you still you still had to go up some stairs. And so I'm out there on the court, and they're starting to set up the little podium, which wasn't quite the big production then that it is now, where it's like a 44-man union crew, and they're all paying scale. So I noticed they're setting this up, and then the players are kind of walking up on the podium. I thought, I wonder what's going on here. And so I kind of go over near the podium, and next thing you know, I hear those opening sounds of One Shining Moment. So I stood next to the podium while the team was watching themselves on One Shining Moment, which was awesome because age one to really today, Adam, would have thought that was the most awesome thing in the world. And so to get to see One Shining Moment when Carolina had won the championship and be standing in very close proximity to Tyler Hansbrough and Danny Green and Ty Lawson, all those guys, and Coach Williams getting all emotional watching it was just one of the greatest things ever. Remember in 05, Coach Smith had been in the locker room with the team and he had said, make sure you watch that One Shining Moment.
That's right.
And there I was getting to watch it at the same time as the team on the court, and it was just... Who would have ever thought that I would get to do anything like that ever?
A different One Shining Moment story, Adam. So we're making the 2005 commemorative DVD.
Yep.
And there had been, I think I made it. I had made a One Shining Moment, but like Tar Heel specific One Shining Moment.
Yep.
And I think maybe we ran it at the banquet. That was why it was made originally. And so we put together the commemorative DVD, which, again, a big shout out to future pod guest Ken Cleary, because really Ken and I did a lot, and 70% Ken worked and put that whole thing together, and that was a beast of a project because we didn't really know what we were doing, but then we kind of figured it out on the fly, and I think it actually turned out pretty awesome. But so the end of it was going to be One Shining Moment. But, Adam, what a couple things I didn't know about, because I was just a young babe in the woods at the time, was, man, David Barrett wants some money if you're going to be using One Shining Moment. And so we decided, we made the call, that it was worth spending the money to do it. But we had to use the David Barrett version, like the original version, and not the Luther Vandross version on the DVD. Because I got to tell you, no offense to David Barrett. He is one who penned One Shining Moment. We understand this.
I think of the Luther Vandross version when I'm thinking of One Shining Moment. And so we had to we kept the same video but put the David Barrett version of One Shining Moment under it, and that made the commemorative DVD. And so a couple of the crescendos in the song are different, and the video doesn't quite feel the same, the one that you get on the DVD, compared to the one that it was originally made for and Luther Vandross's version. But I also had a, as I think you did too, a similar story to yours from 09 and 17, where it's pretty cool being able to sit out there and just watch those guys, watch that video. And I know some people, and it's, I mean, look, it's kind of a corny song. We all get that.
Shut your mouth. But who are you?
I mean, I love the song, but I'm just saying, I mean, I know some people are like, okay, One Shining Moment. But if you love college basketball like you and I do, and like most people listening to this do, then you love it. And when your team wins it, there is nothing cooler than the One Shining Moment version of your song.
Yes. I was trying to think of something to compare it to in other sports, but I don't know that other sports really have it. And some networks have tried, like, okay, this is going to be this version of One Shining Moment. It's just never worked. And for whatever reason, it's perfect. From the first little,
the ball is tipped,
all the way to the end, it's just right.
Is it my turn?
I think so, yes.
Sure. Our lists are getting too convoluted.
Yeah, they're jumbled.
Yeah, crossing over. Adam.
Don't cross the streams.
I'm going to Hell's Bells.
Good one.
Because, again, I'm hearkening back to the early days of trying to figure stuff out on the audio-video side of things, and we wanted to find something to play before the fourth quarter. And I don't remember who came up with the suggestion or how it came about, but Hell's Bells ended up being the choice. And just like Jump Around, it's one of those things that you don't ever quite know what's going to work and what's not going to work, but it's one of those things that worked, that people liked almost immediately, and that now more than 15 years later is still hanging on as a part of Game Day in Keenan Stadium. And I think now it's something you expect. And, you know, the video's gotten better, but we always tried to have big hits to the beats of the song, you know, basic kind of stuff. Two side notes about it, though. One is, and I don't even know if you remember this, either after 1 year or after 2 years, I can't remember which, we thought maybe we'd switch it up. And so we were like, oh, let's play a new song. You know, let's keep the idea the same, but we're going to play a new song. Do you remember what that song was for one game?
No.
Machine Head by Bush.
Wow. Went over well, huh?
People hated it. And we immediately went back to Hell's Bells the next home game.
Hmm.
And so then we felt like, and I don't remember when this was, but we decided we freshen it up and added in the Can't Be Stopped portion of it by, oddly, Roy Jones Jr. And
that's the Roy Jones, the boxer, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's always seemed kind of weird to me.
Yes.
Is he a known rapper?
No, I think it was just a side project for him.
Well, it worked out great.
Yeah.
Now he's playing at Keenan Stadium.
Yeah, for our purposes, it worked out terrifically.
Good job, Roy Jones.
And so it was, I distinctly remember being at the editor, and I'm like Adam with the Blues Brothers. It's not helpful unless you're watching the video pod, where when you're editing audio, you see like blocks of sound, if that makes sense. And so you see the little squiggly lines in the waveform. And I remember looking at the two blocks of sound and like merging the bells together at some point, or merging the beats together. And I was like, this looks like it might work pretty well. And then you played it and it's perfect. Like the tempo's perfect. The bells are perfect. It's for whatever reason, just right between those two songs. And it has turned into a cool tradition in Keenan Stadium. And with Mac Brown, when the Tar Heels are going to be dominating teams going to the fourth quarter this year, it's going to be even more fun.
It wouldn't seem like a game without that.
I agree. I do think now that is one part of game day, again, that you expect. And I've said this before, and I am not nearly – I would say I'm almost not involved at all anymore. But I do remember at some point the philosophy changed from let's try and find these crazy, unique songs, things. And sometimes you, when you get something that's yours, that's good. But people expect to hear certain things in a game. And whether that's Thunderstruck or whether that's Welcome to the Jungle or whether and there's more modern versions of the same things that I'm saying, but they're those types of songs and those however many songs that you want to say that I think fall into that category that you just kind of expect to hear either that song or something similar. And so don't overthink it. Let people enjoy what they are expecting to enjoy and then find your own pieces here and there that are unique to you, but it doesn't have to be all unique all the time. There's some things that's just, you could be in Keenan Stadium or you can be at Soldier Field and you kind of expect like you're going to have a similar experience in some regards.
I have one more.
Yeah.
And I believe you have
I have one more. And then I do have one or two that are kind of on the fringe that really aren't going to make it, but are funny stories.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. The one I have left that is not the one you have left is Kung Fu Fighting.
Oh, I didn't even think about that one. That's a good one, though.
Go back to 2008. The Tar Heels are doing battle with, at that time, a ranked UConn team. It was a night game, which we know because we needed the lights.
Things were different back in 08, Adam.
Yeah, they played football games at times other than noon. Now, the lights were important because to play a night football game, you need the lights to be on.
Yep.
But on this night, they were not always on.
Turned themselves off.
And that created a bit of a delay since no one could necessarily see.
Yeah.
But remember, they did try at first to play with the lights
out. With like 60% light capacity.
Yeah. And you always think, like, oh, these lights are so bright, they could burn out and you could still see fine. That's not true.
No.
It's not like that at all.
It wasn't fair for UConn. Akeem Nicks could still catch it in the darkness and none of them could see the football.
So the lights go out more than once, if I remember correctly.
I think it was twice, yeah.
Yeah, but it was the second time that first – Again, it was a night game.
Yeah.
I can't emphasize strongly enough that the game was at night and had with it everything you associate with a night game. And so what first happened, if my foggy memory is correct, was the wave.
Mm, that sounds right.
Now, I'm normally anti-wave, but in this case, it was probably the best wave ever at a Carolina sporting event, and it went around multiple times because people had nothing else to do. Because there was no football game.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to figure out how to fix the lights. Well, then some genius, which I'm guessing was future pod guest Ken Cleary, which basically this segment is all about future pod guest Ken Cleary, punched the button to play the song Kung Fu Fighting. What stroke of inspiration could have happened at that moment? I don't know. Perhaps if future pod guest Ken Cleary is ever on the future pod, we could ask him, or maybe not if we forget.
My guess is we're going to forget.
So, for some reason, that was the song that was chosen. And at that moment in time, at that place, with those people, that was the exact right song.
It was.
From the initial moment of the song, like, whoa, immediately... Everyone knew.
It was like this huge pop. It was like, bam, 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 and everybody's just like, yeah.
Like, all right, we are now going to Kung Fu fight.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that I wanted to do this right now, but now there's nothing else I want more.
This moment in history will be defined by me Kung Fu fighting.
Yeah. Well, and since then, it's tried to be recaptured with, like, the Kung Fu fighting cam at the Smith Center. And people always act confused.
Yeah, I don't know how to break this electronic board.
Oh, I'm waving my hand. I'm doing a Kung Fu chop. But on that night, sir, everyone was a black belt.
My final one, Adam, I'm going to go with, and I may have told this story before on the pod, I don't remember, but I'm going to go with good old 100 years from Five for Fighting.
Yep.
It's the 100 year celebration, Adam, which really, the further away you get from it, the more awesome it was, because I'm not saying that everybody at Carolina nails every single project they tackle or that every season is a national championship, but that was an awesome event. And I thought just all of it was handled right, both the alumni game and later on the celebration of a century. It was just all the right balance of fun, history, kind of current to nearly current guys as far as the games. And I mean, it was just all of it was a really good time and really showcased, I think, all angles of Carolina basketball. But so I think you and I were down there doing the, I think, were we streaming the alumni game maybe?
That sounds right.
And so we were down at the TV table, and the 100-year video was played sometime earlier in the evening before the alumni game, I think. And this wasn't the celebration of a century game where you had everybody playing, including guys who were a little bit deeper into their journey of life. This was when you had, you know, Antoine Jameson and
Vince Carter
and Ty Lawson, and everybody was out there playing.
I think in people's minds, those two things have become one.
Yeah, they were two separate events.
Yeah.
And so I put that video together, and it was just a really neat moment. I thought, and not to like toot my own horn, I thought it was a good video because of the content. It was the content. It was like the perfect marriage of the content and the song. And with it being the 100 years, it just made sense with the words of the song. And it was just a cool moment. And for me personally, when you're sitting there and kind of the roar of the crowd that you get, or the pops, or the oh, or the whatever, that you hear the reaction to the stuff that you put the work into and was at this really neat event where so many enormous personalities and enormous names in Carolina basketball history were present. Gosh, it was cool. I still watch that video every now and then just to make me feel good.
I watched it this morning.
Nice.
The song really was perfect to go with what was there. And I can, like, even when I hear that song on the radio, I picture the things that you put in the video at the parts in the song where they are. So that song, I don't know. And Five for Fighting, P.S., just one person, not a group. That's weird.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have never known that.
Five for Fighting is one guy.
It's five fingers on its fist.
That's a different guy. Anytime I hear that, I don't know what he intended when he wrote it, but what I think of, which is most important, is Carolina basketball. From the very start, where, because he says 15 right off the bat, and you had the shot of Vince Carter going in for the dunk against Cal. Oh,
masterful.
And I remember when you showed me that video in the office.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking how awesome it was, and I remember I got chills at the exact same time that I got chills when I was watching it in the Smith Center.
Nice.
And I was kind of, in a way, glad that I wasn't stupid and that I hadn't thought it was going to be really awesome, and then everybody sat there like, oh, I'm not sure about this Five for Fighting fella. But it was exactly as good in front of 20,000 people as it was in front of two.
That was a good moment.
I can't wait till we do that for the 200 years. I've got some good ideas for that one.
Adam, this episode of the Carolina Insider is episode 195.
Yep.
That means we're close on the bicentennial. We had such a big celebration for our 100th episode.
Yeah.
I don't even know what we can do for number 200.
It's going to be tough to top. We're going to decorate the urinal, though. I think that's for sure.
Maybe Ben Franklin can join us.
I feel like it took a long road to get to 100, but then 200 happened like 2 days later.
Time flies when you're having fun, Adam.
I think that's right.
Adam, any other songs that almost made your cut just for the heck of it?
I almost had Simply the Best. And we've discussed that recently, which is one of the reasons why I didn't put it in there. But the NIT, and also, I think, but this could be wrong, I think when Dick Crum got fired, I was watching the coaches show the next Sunday.
As you do.
Yeah. And they played this montage of Dick Crum to Simply the Best. Which was kind of odd. Like, clearly he wasn't. But in our hearts, I guess he was. But it was like the kind of thing you do on a 1980s coaches show.
Right. I did have in my mind Party in the USA.
Yeah.
And you know my feelings on Party in the USA, Adam. Party in the USA is the anti-jump around.
Right.
So anytime jump around plays in an opposing arena, I know this is stupid. I know it is. But it automatically makes me feel better about the Tar Heels winning the game. Like, I think the Tar Heels, I get less worried about the game as soon as I hear jump around, because I think, oh, that's foolish of you to play
right.
Virginia Tech yeah. or whoever. That's the Tar Heel song.
Yeah, they're just giving Carolina power.
They clearly are going to embrace this and charge to victory. Whereas Party in the USA, and you've been there when it happened.
Yeah.
I start freaking out if they play Party in the – I shouldn't let the other league teams know this,
yeah.
quite honestly.
Yeah.
It's probably bad to have this on record.
There's a certain person over in Raleigh putting a note in her desk yeah. drawer right now to leave it for the next person.
Say, you want to tweet immediately after. So it was 2010, NIT season. A lot of yeah. these negative memories go there. Yeah. And Carolina was at Kentucky. And Party in the USA came on in the pregame. And I'll never forget Marcus Guignard and former pod guest Deion Thompson, just seems like a logical future pod guest. We love Deion. Were out warming up, and they weren't doing anything wrong. I mean, I don't want to, like, put this on them. It was a very popular song at the time. And so they were, I mean, it was the informal shoot-around period, and they were just kind of singing and laughing. And I just remember seeing it happen. And then the Tar Heels lost that game. And ever since then, I feel like whenever Party in the USA comes on, that's a bad omen.
Good job having fun, Deion and Marcus.
Yeah, I didn't.
10 years later, you've ruined everything.
I don't want to make it seem like, because they didn't do anything wrong. It was just the song. I just remember them, like, laughing and sitting, like, mouthing the words and shooting. And then things went poorly. And it's always stuck with me that somehow Party in the USA is going to ruin things.
You know,
now, I can play it right now.
Right.
Because there's
That's
no
fine.
Game going
Yeah, there's
on.
No game.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to disparage Miley Cyrus. She did a nice job with this pop anthem.
As she often does.
Yeah.
100 Years by Five for Fighting.
Yes.
Was that also on the 2005-06 highlight video?
Yes.
That was a really good video.
Maybe it's just that song that gets it done.
No, that video was good. And I looked. That's not on the internet either, because I looked for hours for that thing.
I don't even remember why that – I chose to use that for the 06 thing, but we did. And then, you know, a couple years later came the 100 Years thing, and I was like, well, I don't want to use the song again. Then I thought, yeah, it's too perfect.
I remember you saying that. Like, yeah. Do you think it's okay to go back to it? Like, yeah, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, it works too well.
That video was good.
Ah, sands through the hourglass, Adam. Adam, anything else before we get out of here?
Boy, a lot's happened.
A lot has happened. We have got we've got some really good pods coming up. I hope you enjoyed today's pod. But we have some really good pods coming up. We're accruing guests left and right. Already have some interviews loaded up that are going to be coming your way over the next couple of shows. We need to do a Roadhouse Challenge. I think we'll put a vote out for that here later this week and get that out either this week or early next week. And don't forget about the spring game. 5 o'clock tomorrow night, Keenan Stadium. Think you'll have a good time. Big day around Chapel Hill, as we've talked about. Hopefully the weather holds and it is nice. And you can just enjoy being in Chapel Hill. And one thing I do think, this is going to be a little preachy, Adam, but one thing I think that we hear a lot from former players and people who aren't in Chapel Hill all the time is how awesome it is to be back. And so I know everybody's lives are busy, but man, spend a fun afternoon in Chapel Hill. Enjoy some Tar Heel football. You heard from Coach Brown what he's hoping for from you guys to really help continue this positive momentum, and tomorrow's a big step in that regard.
And it's an all-around fun day.
Yeah.
Don't forget, if you're a Rams Club member, a lot of things going on for Rams Club members especially that you should make sure you know about before you head to Chapel Hill so you can take advantage of all that.
Adam, anything else?
No.
Let's let Mac Brown and the RZA send us out here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
This is Mac Brown. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.